The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Porschbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Porschbills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Porschbills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Porschbills.com. Toll-free number 888-9888. 938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back, 15 into hour three. Rick Hammerly and Nick Luck to fill out this weekend preview and to officially, as we say every year, pack up the Triple Crown season. The recap comes to an end, really, with Rick's visit, because we already talked to Nick Luck about it on Monday. Nick is going to visit to give you your Royal Ascot preview. But with Hammer's visit, the Triple Crown coverage will draw to a close, and then we pack it up like they do in at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, and we put it away in the up in the giant warehouse of Triple Crown conversation. Morning, Hammer.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Very good.
Good. I am fired up this morning. I don't know what. You know, funny, as you know, besides being a trainer, if you're anybody involved in this business, I think it gives people an open season to call you at any time in the morning and figure that you're going to be up. And you know, I got a 5:30 call this morning from someone back east, and you know what's crazy, I was almost up, but it's funny, it's like, hey man, it's 5:30. What are you calling me for? And it's just funny. So I've been fired up since then and about things. But it is, even you know, it is pretty funny. Well, you work the racetrack, you got to be up at 5, right? But anyway, so it's good, and it was great to see you last week and Tina and God, I forget how much I missed the East Coast. I tell you, a lot of friends and a lot of action, a lot of food, and just a beautiful, beautiful day on Saturday, and actually the days preceding. You don't get that too often on that weekend, as you know. You could get anything from rain to humidity to just sweltering heat. So The day, it was really just a fun day to be out and about. It was a good vibe at the track, don't you think? I thought it was very positive.
Yeah, absolutely was. And you know, when there's 50,000 at Belmont, it's a great day because it fills the building up and the backyard up and the track apron and the boxes. And it just, you know, it's festive. And yet it's not miserable for everybody. When you start to get, you know, to up into the 75, 80,000, it begins to get, you know, even as big as it is. And it can accommodate, but it starts to get a little uncomfortable, and the lines get long and tempers get short when it's like that. Yeah. And it's also cool and breezy, and you know, nobody is schwitzing up a storm. It just perfect
it was, because when it's one of those days you mentioned, you're looking run the race, let's get out of here. And on Saturday, there wasn't that feeling at all. It was so comfortable. So anyway, if you weren't there, you missed it. And I'm sure you saw it on TV if you didn't. And it was as nice a day as they were talking about. But I was reviewing the charts of the day. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of, if you're giving out halfway awards, there's a lot of categories you could sum up right now with Rushing Falls. You know, what a. She just smoked around there at Midnight Bizou. I mean, she took command of that division, and you know, obviously, World of Trouble. He's in a world of his own there on that turf. And Mattoli showed good, and Bricks and Mortar, you know, justified his standing at the top of the turf community. But the 3-year-olds are a different story, the boys and the girls. So there's a lot of racing to be done in the second half of the year to see who's going to emerge with those titles. But, you know, the Belmont was good. It was a good ending for me. But Sir Winston was my third choice, and hooked him up with a few things, and actually had a very profitable day. And it's one of those days, looking back, at the time it didn't mean as much, but boy, if they had taken down Hog Creek Hustle and put that six horse up, but a group of us would have really, I mean, made a major, major score. But didn't know it at the time until Sir Winston won and saw some of the prices. But, you know, good day. And as quick as the Triple Crown season ends, I mean, in reality, Sunday, with the return of Maximum Security, the second half starts. I mean, here we go.
That's true.
First half's over, and when we go, and before you know it, I mean, for some reason, the Haskell moved up. They moved up a week, right? They moved from the traditional last Sunday in July to now they're on July 20th. It seems like it's a 3-week move just mentally getting there, because it was always like a nice long wait to get to the Haskell. And we're, you know, we got maximum security prepping for the Haskell, which is on the 20th of July this year, a week before the Jim Dandy. So, I mean, we're back. There's no rest, and especially that maximum security took the last two races off. So he's, you know, kind of leading the charge now into the second half. But there's, you know, we got the Haskell on July 20th, the Jim Dandy on July 27th, the Travers, of course. Which is going to be a big factor on August 24th. And then the PA Derby, you know, finishes up the 3-year-old season on the 21st. So there's four big races coming up to decide that finish. And, you know, your guess is as good as mine is who's going to make it through there. But I'm glad we have a second half of the season. I mean, we kind of did, but it's really solidified itself. There is a first half, and then, you know, the second half, at some point, if there's not a big standout in the Triple Crown, the second half really just will decide it.
Well, no doubt. And I think people are eager for it. The one horse that seems like he's on a bit of a delayed trajectory at this point now is Omaha Beach, unfortunately, because it would have been nice if he had, you know, been able to keep pace. But he's going to have to, you know, try to put on some sort of a late season bid, I would imagine.
Yeah, you know what? I should have tried to talk to that barn before today. Maybe before next week, we'll get a little bit of an update and
give him a week to work with him.
But you know, Richard Mandela, he will do what's right, and there won't be any rush involved. If it's going to be a month, it'll be a month. If it's going to be 3 months, it'll be 3 months. And rest assured, when he does come back, he'll be on top of the on top of his game. So a couple things going on out here. I mean, so there's 6 days left in the old Santa Anita meet. And, you know, they were asked by the racing board out here to just, you know, shut her down. And they don't have the power to say that, to do that. They can suggest it, which is kind of odd in itself. But there is a measure out there that is being pushed through the government, whatever avenues it needs to be, that will give them the power to actually shut a meet down for cause. But Santa Anita said, nope, we're going to finish them up. So there's 6 days left in the meet, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then next week. And they added another layer of rules to get horses to run with a panel to review the races after they're drawn and review the past performances, and also, I guess, go through the vet records of every horse. And if one of the five members of this panel says no go, it's a no go. And so just to be clear that this, as right now, this is only affecting the final 6 days of Santa Anita. It's not carrying over into the next meet or the next two meets as of right now. Just wanted to make that clear. Unless you've heard, there is no time frame when they're going to announce these changes. Have they announced the changes for this today? I didn't look before I got on, but you know, our handicapper is going to have to guess which horses may or may not run. And
when they put out the press release, it said that they would be in effect for the last 6 days of the meet.
Right, but so you know what I meant was, like, today's races. Have they announced these scratches that they're? Who's got an all clear, or when's that going to happen? And you know, Sunday's PTs have been out for a while. There's a big carryover. Not a big carryover, a payout. There's $1 million expected
Sunday
to be $5 yep. million. And, you know, we're looking at the PPs now, but we don't know which horses may or may not be taken out for cause.
That's true.
And my question just is, I haven't seen when they're going to do this. And anyway, we all like to look at the horses, and we're glad that they're scrutinizing them and all that stuff. But let's, like I said, make this clear that right now it's just for this last 6 days here. And we'll move on from there and head to Los Al and then on to Del Mar. But there's one other thing going on out here I think you've seen on the internet recently. It's kind of a grassroots call to attention.
Yeah.
Going to take place on Thursday, the 20th, at Clocker's Corner at 10:45. And I say it's a grassroots call to attention. This is being done by a small group of people trying to organize the hardworking people of the Latino community that basically have had no voice so far in what's going on here. And by that, I mean mostly the backstretch workers and their families and you know, not just them, but anyone that's a part of the racing community that's kind of behind the scenes that is so affected by what's happening and you know, the threatening of closures and things like that, reduced dates. And these are people whose lives are being affected. I don't think it's being portrayed out there in the news. We all know it in the game. We all know their contributions, and there's no questioning that. But this is going to be they're asking for all trainers, all backstretch community workers, and their families to show up. Anybody basically involved in the game to show up at Clocker's Corner around 10:45, and there will be some news cameras there. Gentleman by the name of Oscar De La Torre, who will represent them and talk a little bit about the jobs and the community and things like that. And he's involved in the Latino community. And anyway, I'm just wanted to let people know if they're around and they're listening and they're here, go to Santa Anita. Fans, anybody, go and show some support. Just trying to get the human side out a little bit on this. And I know it's a little bit late in the meet, and I guess no one really thought that it would go on and carry on as far as it did. But anyway, Thursday at Santa Anita, just going to, you know, go out and show some support to the game and the workers and everybody that's really involved in the thousands and thousands of jobs and families that are affected by what's going on. So,
well, you see it, you can see on the internet, it's being circulated quickly. So I think there'll be a very good response to it.
Yeah, I hope so. And you know what? I hope that the news cameras show as much interest in this part of the story as they have to, you know, the horses getting hurt, and it would be a positive, just a positive outlook, especially out there, the people that watch the news and all they hear about Santa Anita is, horses going down. I think they need to put a face to it and see some people out there, but. I wanted to get that story out too. So, I heard you. Churchill has a really nice card going on. I saw that on Saturday night. That's fantastic. It is nighttime, right?
Yeah.
And so that means a 5 o'clock start for them. Is that correct?
Make it 6 o'clock. First post is 6 o'clock. Yeah.
Now. Have you made one of the Saturday night Churchill runs? That sounds pretty good to me.
Oh, it's a riot. It's wonderful. It's great. They do the different themes, and this week's is the Big Easy. They're doing a New Orleans theme, and I don't know, I suppose this means beads and all kinds of similar stuff and debauchery. But The one that was unbelievable was the American Pharoah. I was going to be there anyway, no matter who won the Derby and how things proceeded from there. But the fact that it was this incredible celebration and, they had a horse that they trotted out for an hour and 20 minutes. It was crazy. It was crazy. Paraded up and down the front of the stands, then was in the paddock, then went back out, and until finally he started to get a little annoyed. He'd had enough, but no other horse would have put up with it for an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It was great. It was just great.
That's a great idea, especially in these hot days of summer, possibly. But I got to make one of those. But a good card put together by Ben Huffman and his crew and just a lot of good races. So the Stephen Foster, I heard a little bit of talking about it earlier, but so this is the first year it's run or in a long time as a grade two. It was downgraded last year, and guess what? They only got 12 horses in it this year. It's those grade things are really amazing. How they, some horses will go this way or that way. Now, chances are, if this is a grade one, maybe Mackenzie decides to stay and run here as a little bit longer might have suited him.
I don't know.
I'm just throwing that out.
Yeah, I know. I know. Yeah.
I know, but the grade, they go for the grade ones and the grade, Pavel's possibility, right? I mean, he's not a miler. He could have run here, but maybe he won the race or he's won here before. So anyway, what the best part, what I'm saying is it's just it's only a grade two, but he got a great field. And, this is maybe Gift Box in here is going to separate a little bit, but this category, the long category for older horses on the dirt is it's open, wide open. And that's kind of nice to see. By the numbers alone, I mean, Gift Box is an absolute standout. With John Sadler, we've talked about it in the prior weeks about he's still not a 100% when he ships. He's had some trouble over the years, but he cracked that egg this last year. So going into Churchill, still a little bit, but Gift Box to me stands out like a sore thumb. Albert Stahl's horse, Tom Zetat. I've been chasing this horse around and cash a little bit here and there. I like him a little bit. in this, you know, the prep in the Ali Sheba's is as well. I don't know what the price is on him. Seeking the Soul points for these races every year, the Churchill stuff with Dallas Stewart. And he's always one of those ones when he wins, I go, boy, I should have had him. And then when I bet him, he doesn't run well. But he's well-suited for this. He likes Churchill. He likes the distances. But as a quick run through on that, I don't know who has got to look and see who Nick Tamrow likes. He's been on a roll lately. He seems to be,
Nick didn't look at it. He didn't look at Churchill.
He didn't. Okay. I just caught the end of him, but anyway, nice card there. Churchill, talked about the Pegasus at Monmouth with Maximum Security, I guess cleared to run, which is great. So it'll be good to see him back in action. I think they've talked about that this is a prep for the Haskell, and he'll be able to showcase him, which, you know, if they move the race, like I said, and if they get him in there, that'll spice up that day. And then we come out here to California. We got that deal on Sunday. And there's about, what do we say, 1.1 million in the pool right now? I think that's the number. I think it's 1.1 million. It's in that 20-cent pick six. And I just got word that Del Mar, just so you know, will be going back to the $2 pick six. Not going back for them, but they'll go to the $2 pick six with that the single ticket jackpot, which has been done in the past. So everyone here that's not in favor of the 20 center just has to wait a little bit longer, and they'll be back to the old style $2 pick six, which is, I know, very beloved here in Southern California. And hopefully we'll pick up some steam as the summer goes along. But I think there's 1.1 million in that pool. They're looking at 5 million, I think, somewhere around there. Although I think the bet has tailed off a little bit out here in Southern California, just because of disinterest, and also because these payoff days have not been jumbo payoff days as there's been hoped for. There's been, I think, one day recently it was okay payoff, but a lot of them have been, you know, under $1,000. And when you sit and go through it and spend all that, it hasn't been worth it. And I, you know, went through the sequence a little bit here. I don't know if you looked at it, Steve. Looked a little chalky to me. Once again, a couple of stakes involved. The Affirmed, which is California's version of the second half beginning for the 3-year-olds, and some horses of note in there. One of them, of course, is Roadster, who won the Santa Anita Derby and, you know, didn't run a jump in the Kentucky Derby. And I mean, you see that so often. Just take the old pen out, draw the line through, and move on. And signaling that Bob's bringing him back here lets us know that he's got another one ready for the second half. And then Mucho Gusto, who we're talking about, I was wondering, as we both were, why he didn't run last weekend in the Woody Stevens. Thought that would be a perfect distance, but now obviously Bob had this race in mind, and always liked this horse. He's got a lot of speed, and I think he'll run well here. But so that's part of the sequence there. So I think you got to get through those. And, you know, the last race as a main claimer is a couple droppers with Mark Glad in there. I think there's one more stake in the sequence, the possibly perfect, which is a long filly mare race, 1.25 miles on the turf, and kind of a speedless event. But there's a couple horses I think stand out there, and Zafina. We might finally get a victory from her in her first stake victory. She's done well. Pants on Fire looks good from Richard Baltus. He won the similar race earlier, the Astra, coming from out of it and winning for fun. And they look pretty tough to beat in here. So I don't know. I couldn't even really find a race to spread in. But it's worth taking a look at. It is only 20 cents. You can spend a few hundred and, you know, take a shot on one of the races. The only way you're ever going to get a decent price is to, you know, as we know, is to get a bomb. And in order to get a bomb, sometimes you got to hit the all button. And you know, I would pick a race or two and give that a shot, and then zero in on the ones that you know, that look rather ordinary and look like they're going to take it. But you know, it's at this point, just talking to people over there at the track, it's, you know, it's going to be 6-5-4-3-2-1. Just kind of let's get through it and, you know, turn the cameras away and get things righted and move on. And get, you know, Los Alamitos is next. Now, they've elected to take a few days off the front of their meet, 2 days, that is, and they'll start, I think, on the Saturday instead of the Thursday. So there'll be a 10-day meet instead of a 12-day meet, which is probably smart by them. And then we'll go into Del Mar. And, you know, I think the Del Mar will see a lot of support, especially locally here, because California needs a boost. We need some Absolutely. Positive energy. And if there's one place to get it, it's Del Mar.
Yeah, exactly. So next week we'll wrap it up, and we hope the few days we'll see how this system is going to work. And we'll remind everybody next week about that that rally at the track Thursday. Hammer, I appreciate it. Had a lot of fun last week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Dave. Always a pleasure. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Rick Amerley, folks, away they go. We're going to stay right here. We got 20 minutes to fill out this busy Friday, the weekend preview, and we're going to preview next week, too, because Nick Luck, who we started with on Monday, and we're going to finish with, because Royal Ascot starts on Tuesday. We talked to Joe Orsino yesterday. Welcome back, Nick Luck.
Hi, Steve. Twice in a week. What have you done to deserve that?
Well, I don't know, but it comes from living right, and you re-entered the social media pantheon on Monday, and you were welcomed back gloriously.
Well, you're very generous as always. It's always a pleasure to join you on your esteemed show, Mr. Bike Fix. Sorry.
boy. Well, let's dive into the Royal Ascot preview. And, of course, the NBC coverage will remind everybody on Monday and lay it out. We'll be taking the races, some of the group ones. And we talked to Joe Orsino, as I mentioned. Joe is involved right on day one. And no place, no meet, Nick, starts with bigger fanfare than Royal Ascot.
Yeah, you straight away into a feast of patent races. Three group ones and a group two following the first four races. It starts with a bang, but the good thing is that, broadly speaking, Ascot can sustain it. There's no doubt that if you're a purist, then Tuesday and Wednesday are probably the best days to go. But the interest sustains all week, and it's fantastic, and it's just got better and better. Somebody published on Twitter a sequence of the race cards from Royal Ascot in the late 80s, and anyone prone to looking at the meet through rose-tinted spectacles needs to take them off, because there is little doubt that in terms of prestige and quality and quantity of the field, the meet has grown just massively since then. You know, I think there was a six-runner Queen Anne and a five-runner Prince of Wales, and whilst the horses that were winning were worthy, they weren't top-level horses, and now it's a completely different ball game. So it's fantastic to see how far it's come.
Well, let's hit some highlights on the week. And, of course, the American side of things, Wesley Ward's involvement, and Imprimus that we talked about with Joe coming midday in the King's Stand. Looks like he's got a chance. And one thing we should note, Nick, weather-wise, it looks like ground is going to be fast, very firm, right?
Well, we've had a lot of rain this week, Steve. It's just a question of how quickly it dries out. And
okay.
We've had a very, very dry year overall. From January through May, the rainfall in most of southern England has been way less than average. But essentially, this week, we've made up for it. On
okay.
Monday, we had 60 millimeters of rain, 60 millimeters of rain in a single day. And Thursday wasn't much better either. So they have taken a whole bucket of rain at Ascot this week, and it actually got the ground on both tracks, the straight and the round track, was recorded as soft yesterday. But just to give you an idea, that's already tightened the point. We've just had a mild day today, not particularly warm, but no real rainfall, and already the ground has dried to good to soft. It does dry up that straight track very quickly indeed. And it means that the clerk of the course is not going to be inclined to water. So it's not inconceivable, if we get a dry spell between now and Tuesday, that we could start the meet on good on the round, maybe the quick side of good on the straight, and by the middle of the week, it's good, fast ground like we're used to.
Very good. All right. Let's dive in then. Things start right off, right? The Queen, what do we start with? With the Queen Anne, right?
Queen Anne, yeah. Bunch finished the race last year. It's going to be an habitual big field up the straight mile. And a lot of the protagonists from last year's race reopposing. Last year's winner, Accidental Agent, who came back with a very good third at Newbury. His old adversaries beat the bank. And one or two others will be in there from last year that you'll be familiar with. Lord Glitters, who always runs well at Ascot. And then they're taking on a fresh group of horses. At the moment, the favourite is Librevido for Aidan O'Brien, who hasn't really sparkled since he won the Jersey in spectacular fashion here on this course for Andre Farber a few years ago. Mustache, who's never been better at the age of six, needs the ground to dry out. Barney Roy, who went stud, failed at stud, came back and won a listed race for Charlie Appleby and Godolphin last time. Lawrence, the filly, who's won five Group 1. So it's a good deep field, but there isn't a standout in the race. And I think last year's winner, Accidental Agent, is a perfectly good bet to finish in the three again. That was a much better run than either Connections or the market expected on his comeback run at Newbury. And I think that's a better prep for the race than he had last year. I don't see any reason why he shouldn't run well again. He's going to be 12-14 to 1. And for my money, I think that's a pretty good price. I don't think there's much between him and the ones at the front of the market.
Well, and I'm just looking at... I'm looking at the numbers. I got to go swing backwards. 12-1 right now in the shops.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a good price. I mean,
nice.
It's one of those races where I wouldn't be surprised by any result. I just wouldn't be surprised by any result at all. And it could be that Librevido, the horse who's now trained by Aidan O'Brien, springs back to life at Ascot because this is where he's produced his career best performance by some way. So it's not impossible, but on official ratings, he's got a bit to find with an awful lot of these horses.
Turning to the two-year-olds, right? The Coventry, second on the day.
Yeah, the Coventry Stakes is the first race exclusively for two-year-olds during the week. There's the Coventry on Tuesday, and then Wednesday we've got the Queen Mary and the Windsor Castle. Thursday, the Norfolk Stakes. And then on Saturday, the Chesham Stakes, over 7 furlongs. But the Coventry is traditionally regarded as the classiest colts two-year-old race of the meet and has thrown up some very good horses down the years. Aidan O'Brien's got a great record in the race. He's won it 8 times before. And he's got a horse called Arizona who heads the market and is going to be a tough horse to beat. Chief Threat domestically at the moment is a horse called Threat, trained by Richard Hannon. And there's a horse that I like that won the other day called Guildsman, trained by Archie Watson, a horse that came out of the Breeze Up sale. I think it's a very nice horse. It could go well. But the really interesting one, if he runs, is Vizinari, who won Newmarket just last week. It was one of the best time performances by a two-year-old in the last 5 years on Newmarket's July course. Owned by an Australian, fairly new owner to British racing, though he's had plenty of horses in Australia, Rob Ferguson. Very well-bred horse, and I think that if he runs, he'll take all the beating Vizinari. And Sylvester D'Souza is jocked up to ride him if he does run, and I'd be very surprised if he didn't go very, very close. I think he'll give Aidan O'Brien and everybody else something to think about if he shows up in the Coventry, Vizinari.
Okay, nice. There we go. And right now, 5-1, basically
yeah,
second choice on the market.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on the record already of saying how much I like Guildsman, and I think he's a horse that will run a bold race if he takes his chance. And several of these are double entered, but yeah, I'd be very, very sweet on Vizinari if he runs it.
The King Stand is mentioned, the target for Imprimus, and this was a very smart gambit by Joe Orsino, and of course the Breeze Easy team came to Ascot last year and won with Shang Shang Shang.
Yeah, I think they think they've got a shot here, and I can see why. You know, the horse has got good form, seems to be impervious to ground conditions. I get it, I do get it, but I think, I've said this elsewhere, and I'll say it again, I think you're hoping against hope that two horses underperform. And I think Batash and Blue Point have to significantly underperform. For my money, they are two of the best turf sprinters in the world. They're in their own parish. Blue Point is a out-and-out specialist at this track. He loves it. He won the race last year. Batash was second in the race last year, but seems, well, according to his connections and according to his comeback run, appears to be better this time round. And I think he'll be favored by that little bit of recent rain. If that bit of recent rain has taken the sting out of the ground, I think Battash is going to be a very, very tough nut to crack indeed. Blue Point is just rock solid at Ascot. Mads Cross, we shouldn't underestimate. She won a brace of grade ones last year, and she's a very, very good filly from a trainer who does well with improving fillies, Michael Dodds. Then you've got Aiden Sergei Prokofiev, Soldier's Call, who was a very good two-year-old on the course. Being a three-year-old, received all the weight from the older horses. It's a big weight concession. So it's a tough spot for Imprimis, but I think he's a worthy horse. And of course, he's got the huge advantage of having Frankie Dettori on his back. So I wouldn't altogether rule him out. But I think in terms of a win proposition, he's got to rely on both Blue Point and Battash underperforming.
Interesting. All right. Well, it's an international cast too. When you look at the likes of Battash and Blue Point, etc. Let's look at the St. James Palace.
I think it's much the best of the sprint races through the week. The King's Stand. I quite like Bound for Nowhere as a win prospect in the Diamond Jubilee on the Saturday, because I don't think he's facing opposition of the same depth, which is unusual. You'd normally think that the six furlong horses would be classier horses than the five furlong horses. But I think we've just been in an unusual period where the fives are a little bit better.
Interesting. All right. Well, that gets us to the St. James Palace.
Yeah, the St. James Palace is traditionally a race where horses that have been competing in the mile Colts Classics during the early part of the season meet. And that's the case here with the first and second from the Irish 2000 Guineas Phoenix of Spain and Too Darn Hot taking on horses that have come from different form lines. We haven't got Magna Grecia. He's not recovered from his pulled hamstring that he incurred in the Irish Guineas. But we have got an interesting horse coming from another route, and that's King of Comedy, the stable companion of Too Darn Hot, trained by John Gosden. He's taking the without parole route to this race. The listed Heron Stakes at Sandown and a comfortable victory in that against inferiors before stepping up to take on horses out of the classics in the St. James's Palace. And he's a very interesting horse, I think. King of Comedy, he's just getting the hang of things. But I think Too Darn Hot can get a good bit closer to Phoenix of Spain this time. He was last season's champion juvenile. He's a very good horse. I think that the tactical nature of this race may well suit him. I think the short stretch on Ascot's round old mile, rather than the straight mile. They run this race on the old mile round a bend. They run the Queen Anne up the straight. And I think the short stretch here will suit Too Darn Hot. He's a handy horse with lots of tactical speed. Phoenix of Spain, he is a major player in all the big races this season. He's very good in Ireland. And the Frankie Dettori will be very wary of giving Jamie Spencer on Phoenix of Spain too much rope if he chooses to ride him handily again.
Well, that is the Group 1s for Tuesday. The day also winds down with the Ascot Stakes and the Wolverton before we get to the next day's action and the Prince of Wales. And you are still spelling it W-A-L-E-S, right?
Prince of Wales on the Wednesday. I thought earlier in the week that the Gold Cup, the 2.5 mile Gold Cup on Thursday might be one of the races of the week. But given the field that we've now got confirmed as intended runners for Wednesday and the Prince of Wales, I think the Prince of Wales is going to be the race of the week. It's an absolute crackerjack. Okay, it doesn't have Enable, but it's got Enable's representatives, if you like, in the shape of the filly that she just beat in the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe, Sea of Class, and the filly that she beat a little bit more comfortably, but gave her a fright nonetheless, Magical, in the Breeders' Cup Turf. So Sea of Class and Magical representing that Enable form from last season, and many people, observers, believe that with a clear run, Sea of Class would have won the Arc. Then you've got Massar coming back, last year's Derby winner. We haven't seen him since. This will be his first run back. I mean, what a deep, deep pond to be swimming in for your comeback race. He's coming back. William Buick, his regular rider, can't ride him. He's still off. He won't be at Ascot. He's incurred some post-head injury trauma. He had a fall, and there's just been some residual effects of that fall that are still bothering him. I think he's going to be fine. He's getting much better, but he can't rush it, obviously, as you can't with a head injury. So he's off. for Ascot, and his ride will be taken by James Doyle in the main, and probably Kieran McAvoy, who's come over from Australia to take some rides for Godolphin. So Massar will be ridden by James Doyle, which means that James Doyle can't ride Fierce Class because of his retainer. That'll be a huge blow to him. And so William Haggis will be looking for a replacement rider. But there'll be plenty of people available and plenty of people ringing up for the ride. But this is an absolutely cracking race. The Sea of Glass, Magical, Massar. It's a top-notch race. And don't forget Crystal Ocean in there as well. Still to win a Group 1, but officially on World Thoroughbred rankings, the fourth best horse in the world last year. So this is a serious horse race.
And Waldgeist as well. And
Waldgeist.
And then Hunting Horn, who never stops running. Every time I look up, he's in a race.
Any price you like with me, Hunting Horn. Those words will come back to haunt me.
I guess we'll stick with the Group 1s and hit those highlights, because you mentioned the Gold Cup on Thursday, Friday, the Commonwealth and the Coronation, and you referenced the Diamond Jubilee as well on Saturday.
Yeah, the Gold Cup's a terrific race. It really is. We've made an enormous effort in this country to try and bolster the program for the staying horses, to try and incentivize breeders of more stamina-laden horses to continue to do that rather than just trying to breed for cheap speed. And I think it's had a major impact. The Gold Cup itself evidently revolves around Stradivarius, who went through last season unbeaten, won the £1 million bonus for winning the Gold Cup at Ascot, the Goodwood Cup, and the Lonsdale at York. He's on track to try and do the same thing again, having won the Yorkshire Cup first up this season. I think it'd be fair to say that he hasn't looked at his absolute sparkling best the last couple of times he's run, but I think he's probably getting cuter and just does enough, and he knows how to win races. So it's another great opportunity for him. Having said that, this is the deepest race he's ever run in. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind about that since he's joined the senior ranks. He takes on the Melbourne Cup winner, Cross Counter, who also won the Dubai Gold Cup. He takes on DXB, who won the key trial for this on Ascot Trials Day, and looks as though he's the sort of horse who wants to go a bit further. Hugh Garden, who was the winner of last year's St. Ledger and looks a very, very potent force if he can stretch his speed. And he'd be my pick at the current odds. His stable companion, Southern France, who ran Stradivarius close at York last time. It's a very, very, very deep running of the Gold Cup. Stradivarius has got plenty on his plate in that race.
How about Friday's action, the Calm and the Coronation?
Yeah, the Coronation Stakes is one race that intrigues me because there's one horse I'm really looking forward to seeing in that. It's a race that revolves around Hermosa. She's the dual classic winner. She's won the English Guineas, the Irish Guineas. She's a very good filly indeed. But if there's one filly that I'm just excited about, it's Jubiloso, who's been so impressive. It's very limited experience, but the fact that her trainer is such a patient trainer, Sir Michael Stout, willing to bang her in here against a couple of classic winners suggest to me she's very, very good. And I'm excited about seeing her and seeing what she can do. Stepped up in grade. As for the Commonwealth Cup, it's rather fallen into 10 Sovereign's lap, in a sense, for rather unfortunate reasons. We were really hoping there'd be a wonderful clash between 10 Sovereign's Calix, who looked so exciting, and Lady Kaya. Unfortunately, Calix suffered an injury when it beaten at very long odds on at Haydock last time. He looked so exciting when winning the Coventry last year. He's very talented, very fragile. He'll be off till the autumn, so he won't run. But even more sadly, almost tragically, Lady Kaya broke a leg on the gallops the other day. And for a stable who really is a small stable, Sheila Lavery, pinning their hopes on one horse to lose her was an absolute gut-wrencher. And I think everyone really felt her pain. So the upshot of those unfortunate circumstances is that it rather has been left to 10 Sovereigns, one of the best sprinting two-year-olds from last year, to see if he can resume the winning thread, cutting back in distance after running respectably, but not staying the distance in the Guineas at Newmarket. And his chief dangers are probably going to be Jash, who ran so well behind him at Newmarket last year, and Hello Yumzen, who beat Calix when Calix was wrong at Haydock last time.
Nick, got about a minute and a half, and the one name the one set of horses we haven't talked about is Wesley Ward, and of course, unfortunately, Lady Pauline got sidelined. A lot of excitement early on about her potential involvement, but then she didn't run great in that first try last month, and then a minor setback, so she's out. But Nayabeth, Karak, Foolish Humor, Maven, Kimari, Anna's Fast, and of course Bound for Nowhere comes back. Any thoughts about Wesley's team and what his chances are?
Yeah, I've seen them all. I've seen them all working as well this week. I think Maven's got a very good chance in the Norfolk Stakes on what I've seen. He's in the sales on Monday night. It'd be interesting to see what happens there, but I'd be staggered if he, whatever happens in the sale ring, be staggered if he doesn't represent W. Ward on Thursday in the Norfolk, and I'll be surprised if he doesn't give a pretty bold showing. I think that's important for an awful lot of people for an awful lot of reasons, not least of which is his parentage being by American Pharaoh. And I think Bound for Nowhere, if he runs the same race as he did last year and he sticks with the rest of the field, doesn't wander off on his own, I think he is, again, a good each-way bet in the Jubilee. He's sort of 10, 12 to 1. I just think it's a good price. I think he's an exciting horse. It's a bit difficult to know with the fillies of Wesley exactly what they've achieved. But I quite like Anna's Far, I think, from what I've seen with my own eyes.
Nice. Well, and usually there's one that's expected to run well that disappoints, and then one that is lesser that runs well. So,
It's a question. The variables with Wesley's horses are a little bit different. I mean, it's 2-year-olds. I mean, it's older horses. You judge them on what you know, and he's done very well with the older horses at Ascot as well.
Yeah,
undrafted and Constance Zero and so forth. But with the 2-year-old, there's other factors to take into account. He tends to avoid the Coventry because you're running into horses that have got potential to go on and do a good bit better later in the season. But the 5-furlong race is, yeah, sometimes the Queen Mary can come up a bit weak. And it did last year. And his horse, if you remember, had no luck. Just bobbled out of the stall and then got pinched at the crucial moment in the race, after which he would have got pretty close. The horse is going to win the Castle again. Sometimes they can come up a bit thin and he can get an advantage. It was contingent slightly on the ground. He'll be wanting it to dry up pretty quick, I would have thought.
Nick, we'll be watching on NBC, and we'll be listening in here as always. Thanks so much. Best of luck next week.
All right, Steve. I'll just give one more plug for the coverage next week if I can. It's 8:30 Eastern, Tuesday through Friday. 8:30 Eastern on NBCSN, and then 9 o'clock Eastern on NBC on Saturday, and it is every race live on each of the 5 days. If I say every race every day, I get into trouble for breach of copyright, but you know what I'm getting at.
You bet. Nick Luck, everybody. We'll talk to you Monday.